Snowmobiling in Maine. Maine's snowmobiling community marks a golden anniversary this year. 2015 is the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Maine Snowmobile Association. In the past half century, the MSA has grown from 6 people to more than 280 clubs statewide. Its volunteers work with landowners, maintain trails, and promote one of Maine's iconic outdoor activities. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn more about sledding, its impact on the Maine economy, where to go, how to get started, and how to stay safe with two experts who know the answers. Bob Myers is Executive Director of the Maine Snowmobile Association, and Chris Ring is with Automatic Distributors. Are you planning to hit the trails this weekend? Have tips for the rest of us? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Snowmobiling is one of the many ways Mainers make the best of our long, cold winters. Maine has thousands of trails that sledheads from across the state and the nation take to when the snow has fallen and the great outdoors is calling. Our guest today will explain why so many people come to Maine to get their snowmobiling fix. Joining me in the studio today, Bob Myers. He is Executive Director of the Maine Snowmobile Association. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Chris Ring, Business Development Manager of Automatic Distributors in Bangor, which is a major supplier of snowmobile parts, gear, and accessories. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you ever wondered how to get started with snowmobiling? Or are you a diehard snowmobiler? And if so, do you have a favorite place that you would like to share with the rest of us? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Bob, welcome to the studio. I understand this is a big year for the Maine Snowmobile Association.
This is our 50th anniversary, Jen, so it's a great time to come over and talk about what's going on.
50th anniversary. So, Maine Snowmobile Association, what do you do exactly other than get together and ride?
Well, we never do enough of that, but generally we serve as a clearinghouse for the 289 snowmobile clubs across the state. And they're all volunteer organizations, and they're the folks that groom and maintain and do landowner relations for 14,500 miles of trails across the state.
Wow, 280 clubs. So I'm guessing some of these clubs are tiny and some are really something.
It goes everywhere from a 500-member club like up in Rangeley, which is a very popular area, to little spots literally out in the middle of nowhere.
And we're right in the thick of it, right? I saw a Facebook post just before I came on the air about somebody going to one of the clubs that has a big breakfast this weekend, or at least one of them has.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot going on. We're right at the height of the season now. Things really get going starting at New Year's. And, of course, we have to have our obligatory January thaw that everybody gets upset about. And here we are back in business, and we're having a terrific year from all appearances.
Okay, and I know that the early cold was helpful, and then the snow, we're ahead of usual in snow, but there's still some safety warnings out. We've had a whole bunch of near drownings just this past week.
Yeah, we've been putting notices out to people and warning them. We did have the thaw, and there's a lot of water holes on the trails that opened up, and there was some flooding, and so there's wet areas. And so when folks are out there, they need to be really careful and keep an eye peeled, because you don't want to end up in something like that. At the very least, you're going to get soaking wet when it's cold out, and you know, at worst, you're going to have some serious problems.
Bob, I want to back up a little bit. How'd you get into snowmobiling?
Well, my dad brought home our first snowmobile erupt in 1969 when we lived in Gorham, and we'd go out bombing around in the fields and had a wonderful time.
And what kind of snowmobile, what kind of sled, I should say, was it?
It was a RUP.
And a RUP, okay.
A RUP. And actually, that's one of the metrics for judging how good a year it is. If you see RUPs start showing up on the registration list, it means everybody's out there.
Explain that.
I don't think they've manufactured those since the mid-1970s.
Okay, so it has to be really good to be confident in that.
You're
yes,
ready
sir.
To go.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I interrupted you. In 1969, your dad bought one.
And so we had a great time with it. And, of course, obviously it was much different then. There was no trail system per se. I remember one time we lived in Gorham, and my dad took us up to Sebago Lake State Park, and we actually rode on a trail, which was really amazing. And, you know, the way it's evolved since then, it has really been pretty impressive.
Well, you know, reading up this morning, did I read properly that there are more than 14,000 miles of official groomed and taken care of trails in Maine?
That's correct.
14,000.
Just about anywhere you need to go in the state of Maine, you can get there by snowmobile.
And that works by these local snowmobile clubs negotiating with landowners, right?
Well, and that's the thing that's so remarkable about all this. The entire system is maintained by volunteers. So you have this incredible infrastructure, and they deal with landowners, and landowners in Maine, as you probably know already, are incredibly generous with the use of their property. 95% of our trails are on private land. And they go out and they clear the trails, they mark them, they groom them in the wintertime, and it's really quite an experience.
I think there are a lot of people out there who don't snowmobile, and their experience with snowmobilers is either on the news, they've seen some terrible story about someone going through the ice or getting in an accident, or they're out somewhere and they hear a snowmobile. So I want you, for those people in the audience today who have never been on a snowmobile, who maybe don't quite get it, tell us about it. What is so special and magical about snowmobiling?
It's a great way to get out in the wintertime and see the sights. The one thing that's very unique about snowmobiling is there's a lot of places you can go in the wintertime on a snowmobile trail that are pretty difficult to get to by any other kind of vehicles in different times of the year. So you can go up and you can ride all the way around Moosehead Lake in a day. Mm. Or you can ride from Greenville over to Millinocket and spend the night and come back the next day. We have very varied terrain all over the state. We have big woods, we have mountains, we have fields, and there's trails on all these things. So you can have a different experience every time you go out. And the thing that's really terrific is all of the services are available trailside. So you can get to a motel or a restaurant or a gas station or a repair shop. And there are people that literally come to Maine, put on the saddlebags, and they go for a week and go from point to point and really get to see some things.
I remember, it must have been 15 or 20 years ago, working on a story in which I got the opportunity to go to a restaurant that was only accessible by snowmobile up on sort of the Maine-Canadian border, and folks from both sides of the border headed there. Is that still a thing?
That still happens. It's a little more difficult to cross the border now, but people do it, and it's really fantastic. And get out these places that you just can't imagine are out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that one had a blazing fire, and it's making me hungry just thinking about it. That
well,
was.
and at the same time, you can go out for a day. I mean, we're sitting here at the studio in Portland. Within 3 or 4 miles of here, there are snowmobile trails that are maintained by snowmobile clubs, and you can go out and ride.
All right. Well, Chris Ring is here now. We had a little technical problem, and Chris, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us. I want to get into some nuts and bolts with you, Chris, but first I want to ask you how you got started in the snowmobiling world.
Well, just something that we've always been doing in the family. Mom and Dad got me started at the age of 7. riding around the yard. We got home videos of it. I don't know. It's just always been something we've loved, and the snow just kind of feels like freedom to me.
How hard is it to learn?
It's really not that hard. Modern snowmobiles, you can get on and go much like operating a car. I mean, it's different, but the ease and the simplicity of use is very, very similar.
Okay. Talk to me about the economic impact. Obviously, your business is dependent on snowmobiling. What do we know about the economic impact of snowmobiling throughout the state?
Well, just in customers that we deal with, there's literally several hundred of independent repair shops and franchise dealers throughout the state. They're many employees. Some of them are just small shops, but I mean, it's Bob can better speak to the number of it, but I mean, it's in the millions of dollars in terms of the the tourism and the small businesses that are dependent upon it.
What do you know, Bob? What do you want to follow up on?
We're just starting on a new economic impact study with the University of Maine, but the best estimate at this point is it has an economic value of $350 million a year, and the full-time equivalent of about 2,300 jobs statewide.
Mm. And those jobs are the shops that sell the
shops,
snowmobiles to repair.
The motels, the lodges, the gas stations, things. The thing that's unique about snowmobiling, there's a lot of areas that, particularly in rural areas, that don't have a whole lot to offer in the wintertime. And snowmobiling allows these businesses to go year-round. A good example is the Forks. Where
whitewater rafting in the
whitewater
summertime.
Whitewater rafting, and they discovered about 20 years ago that you could keep your good employees on year-round by opening up to snowmobiling and grooming some trails and being part of the system, and it's worked out tremendously.
Chris, how strong, how good of balance do you have to be a snowmobiler?
Honestly, my wife is a 130-pound, very small lady, and
she's gonna love you saying that on the air. Go on.
she is, you know, excellent at it.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't take a lot of strength. They've got snowmobiles of all different sizes, from the smaller 600s, which would be kind of a beginner sled, up into the 1100 cc Yamahas and Arctic Cats. You know, it's a very easy thing to do. You know, as long as you've got the proper gear, you know, it's something that everybody can do.
Is it expensive?
Define expensive.
Or is it one of those things that it can be as expensive as you make it?
That's really about it. I mean, a lot of families, you can go in and start off with a used machine or two. And it goes up. I mean, you can pay approaching $20,000 for a snowmobile if you want to, and all the gear. But you can get into it relatively inexpensively. Or if someone wants to try it, there's plenty of places in the state where you can rent a machine and a helmet and your gear. And you can even hire a guide to take you out if you like.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Renting and maybe getting some instruction before
that's
you go out the first time
way.
Trying
all
it
the
out.
Rental places do a terrific job of training people how to use the machines. And they are relatively simple. Right-hand throttle, left-hand brakes. Stay on the right side and keep an eye peeled.
Okay, so we put this in our promo for today's program. I want to talk about rules and regulations a little bit. What, Bob, do you do if there's a moose on a path?
You stay out of its way.
It has the right of way, right?
It absolutely has the right of way, and it's very, very common for people to see moose, deer, coyotes, Canadian lynx, you name it on the trails because it's packed down and it's flat and it's easy to walk on. But you want to give them a wide berth and not stress them at all. They're going to take their time sometimes getting off the trail, but you wait. Good time to take some pictures.
Chris, what do you want people to know about rules and regulations that perhaps they don't always follow?
Really, I mean, more than anything on it is it's common courtesy and just respect for landowners. You know, when there is a sign that says stay on the marked trail, please just stay on the marked trail. The landowners network that we have, it's second to none. I mean, it's just excellent and unbelievable. We just want to make sure that we protect that relationship. So just obey the signs.
All right. If you're going to buy a sled, Chris, you're going to also buy a license to operate in Maine, correct?
Yeah, it's essentially the registration that you would buy.
Okay, and do you do that at Town Hall, or do you do that through the place you buy your sled?
You could do it at the Town Hall. Renewal registrations can be done online right through the Maine Inland Fisheries and Wildlife website. So it's a pretty simple process.
All right. Go ahead, Bob.
And that's really important, too, because the registration money and a small piece of the state gas tax is what funds the grant program that the clubs can access for doing their trail maintenance, and so they need every penny they can get their hands on, and so it's really important.
I read an article this weekend that said, like so many other sports. Same thing happening with folks at the who maintain hiking trails and people who hunt and fish, that we're seeing fewer young people going into this sport. That's an issue for your clubs, isn't it, Bob?
It really is. And a lot of clubs are struggling as the volunteers get older, and certainly the younger people. You know, everybody has very busy lives now, and maybe they want to still get out there. But we strongly encourage people to get involved with a local club or a club where they ride and help out a little bit, because it is volunteers that are maintaining the infrastructure of this huge industry. And the volunteer base is definitely aging. We have a groomer that goes out four nights a week up in Mattawamkeag who's 94 years old. And he does a beautiful job, and the trails are great up there. But, I mean, how much longer can we sustain things with that kind of workforce?
Oh, wow. So his club has a grooming machine.
Yes. Oh, yeah. A lot of clubs, particularly in the busy areas, have equipment, and that's another part of the funding picture, equipment that can run upwards of $200,000 to groom the trails.
Wow. Well, such a commitment, and really a testament to how people working together can make something remarkable.
That's right. A lot of the people, they started because they were passionate about this, and they started because they loved snowmobiling, and now a lot of times they find they're too busy doing everything else to snowmobile.
Too busy taking care of the trail to go out and enjoy it themselves.
Things.
Chris, are you a member of a club?
Absolutely. I'm a member of three of them down in the area that I live.
Tell me about your clubs.
Well, there's the St. Albans Snow Devils, the Pittsfield Driftbusters, and the Heartland Smokies Angels. These are all relatively smaller operations compared to some of the more tourist areas, but they do a great job, and you know, they get out there and you know, take care of the trails and do a really good job.
Great. And what about you, Bob? Do you have time?
Sure. When I can, I get out there. I know Chris did his show prep this morning. He's ridden 100 miles already today. So
Chris, where'd you ride this morning?
We started out in the Forks and came back home to Heartland. It was very good. There's some ice in spots, but the clubs up there just do an incredible job.
Wow, 100 miles this morning. Did you see anything you want to share? Did you see any wildlife?
Lots of deer. That's something that's really neat about the Forks area. Say, like, actually, a place I wanted to mention was the Inn by the River. Excellent place, nice people. What's cool is when you wake up there in the morning, the deer are in the backyard. They're just hanging out, waving, saying, come on, get on your sleds, let's go for a ride.
Well, on that note, we do have to take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, tell us your favorite place to go snowmobiling. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Bowdoin College, where the Museum of Art presents Constructing Revolution, an exhibit of Soviet propaganda posters. Bowdoin.edu/arts.
A couple years ago, a group of scientists created a marketplace for monkeys to buy stuff.
And if you looked at the monkeys' data, you just assume it was from a human in a real market.
It turns out that monkeys make the same exact mistakes we do.
And that leads us to a puzzle, right? Why is it that we keep doing dumb things in the face of bad consequences?
The Money Paradox, next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Join us for the TED Radio Hour tomorrow afternoon at 1, and again Wednesday evening at 11, here on Maine Public Radio.
Power dynamics shape everything in our lives, from high school...
You're wearing sweatpants.
So? So that's against the rules, and you can't sit with us.
To the U.S. Senate...
The senator will take her seat.
To the way we feel about ourselves.
Power does make us a little bit more self-focused, but this can happen to us all. This is just what the mind does when we feel powerful.
This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
And you can hear Hidden Brain Sunday morning at 11 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, snowmobiling in Maine, with me in the studio, Bob Myers, who is the executive director of the Maine Snowmobile Association, and joining us from our Bangor studio, Chris Ring, business development manager of Automatic Distributors, a supplier of snowmobile parts, gear, and accessories. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. During the break, Bob and I were talking about landowner relations. I think the word knucklehead snuck through onto the air. Why did that word come up?
Because I toned it down, but knuckleheads is there. It is an issue. Like I mentioned earlier, 95% of this trail system is on private land, and Maine landowners, as a rule, are very generous in allowing the use of their property, not just for snowmobiling, but hunting and hiking and cross-country skiing and all kinds of activities. And so our clubs work a lot with the landowners. They work hard to accommodate the landowners' wishes. And all it takes is for one knucklehead to peel off the trail and go through maybe where they just planted some Christmas trees or where they're trying to protect a crop or things like that. The trails are where they are for a reason, and people just have to stay on them.
All right. On that note, we have an email from Leslie. I'm a 51-year-old woman who started snowmobiling last year with my husband. What an amazing, fun experience. You get to see parts of the state you wouldn't otherwise see, animals and birds, as well as great vistas. I would encourage more women to try this sport. Chris, you said your wife likes to get out there. Is this a growing trend?
I hope so. Like Leslie said in her email, the opportunity to go see areas that are otherwise inaccessible or even very difficult to access during the summer months by vehicle, it's pretty incredible. I'm thinking of areas up in the Rangeley Mountains to over, what is it, Kennebago Mountain?
Kennebago.
No, I'm sorry,
yeah.
Bob. Well, there's East Kennebago, which is a fantastic ride up to the top. But the one that's the largest mountain in the state of Maine, it's 4,000 feet.
Coburn Mountain, just
Coburn,
south of Jackson,
yes.
Jackman.
Absolutely. I mean, just absolutely amazing views up there. And it would be hours and hours and hours to get there by vehicle, but it's a hop, skip, and a jump by snowmobile.
Mm.
And your person who wrote was absolutely right. She picked the best year out of about the past 10 to start, and so she got a great experience. But, you know, as she'll travel around, you'll find a lot of snowmobile club presidents are women. In the 22 years I've been at the MSA, I think 12, 14 of those years have had women presidents. You know they get things done, Jennifer.
We're going to go to Alex in Saco. Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that the club in Saco is called the Saco Pathfinders Club, and it's really confusing how it seems like they're all named different.
Yeah, they have some fun names, yep.
Yeah, but then my major point was it's like the Saco Club, they do stuff year-round. It's not just during the winter. Like, a lot of the trail work is done during the off-season.
Right, and that's very important. I mean, these are social groups. It's almost like the Grange or something, and a lot of clubs have activities year-round. I know the Saco Club has riding lawnmower races in the summertime,
yes,
which are awesome, and yes, they do a lot of things year-round.
I didn't know about any of that till last year, and I wish that there was more advertisement, but it's just word of mouth, and we just need more volunteers all year.
I've always had an issue with the clubs not tooting their own horns enough because they do such an amazing job and do so many varied things. So have you bought a riding lawnmower, Alex?
No, I haven't. I've been there for the races, though. It's a lot of fun.
Alex, thanks so much for calling in. We have an email from John. I'm a new snowmobiler from the Bangor area. I've seen riders signal with a fist or fingers held up when I pass them. What are they telling me? A number of people in their group, perhaps?
Yes. There are hand signals, and we encourage people to use them judiciously. You don't want to be waving your arms around the whole time you're out there. You want to have them on the handlebars. But generally, they'll hold up fingers to indicate how many people are behind them. and the last person will just hold his fist up to indicate that he's the last person in the group?
Oh, good question then. Email from Owen. It seems like snowmobiles are always broken. Is there a way to keep your snowmobile from not being broken constantly? Chris, this sounds like this is in your wheelhouse.
That's Chris's.
Well, we have a bit of a joke. We said that the inventor of the snowmobile was actually just a bearing salesman looking for a way to sell more bearings. you know, certainly because of the extreme conditions that we're riding in, they are, you know, they do require some maintenance. The good thing is that they've gotten a lot more reliable over time. Some of the machines now with four-stroke engines, you know, they're getting excellent fuel mileage, and they can last, you know, thousands and thousands of miles with just basic preseason and postseason maintenance. So it's gotten a lot better over the years.
Okay, we'll go to Josh calling from Brunswick. Hi, Josh. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I have in the past driving around the state with cross-country skis in the car, stopped at snowmobile trails where they cross the road. I'm just wondering how the snowmobile people feel about that.
We're fine with that, with a couple of caveats. First, there are definitely some places you would not want to go on cross-country skis, and that would be like the ITS trails, which are the main corridor trails, and in some of the big areas that are busy. Like this weekend is Snowdio and Rangeley. There's going to be 10,000 people up there. You don't want to be cross-country skiing there. In areas where you are, and right across the river in Topsom, there's a club. And I know people go out in the club trails there and ski. I had a club from Bodenham stop by the office this morning. They just had a group of fat bikers join the club and are going to help out on the trails because they're riding their fat bikes. The key to it is really communicating and letting people know you're there. And if you contact our office, we can put you in touch with the local club. And if people know, they'll keep an eye peeled for you. The trouble is the snowmobiles, as Chris said, have improved so much. They're very quiet now. And they can't hear you at all. And sometimes you might not be able to hear them until they're right up on top of you.
Right. Okay. So when you say let them know, do you recommend if you're going to go cross-country skiing to call someone from a club?
It would certainly help.
Yeah.
It would certainly help. But
there's not like sort of some sort of sign that you leave on the trail or something like that.
No, because they won't see it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and the clubs, as a rule, you know, part of another important role they play is disseminating information to riders in the area where they are.
Okay.
And they can say, hey, look out, there's skiers out here this weekend.
And what about people who do things like sled dogging and stuff like that? Do they share?
Sled dogs, there is some sharing. It's a little more problematic because, in spite of some pictures you see, sled dogs don't go right in a nice straight line when they're going down a trail. Usually they're splayed out all over the trail.
Mm.
And so that's a bit of an issue. But part of the Cam Crown that they have over here is on snowmobile trails. And that's all signed, and we put out all kinds of notices that, you know, to let riders beware so that animals don't get hit and people don't have a problem.
Great. Josh, thanks for your good question. We're going to go to Louisa, who has a Facebook post. Can you all explain to me why snowmobiles have to be so loud? I can see why people like snowmobiling, but I worry about the impact of the noise and exhaust on birds and animals. Chris?
Well, federal standards now keep snowmobiles actually quite quiet, and there have been, I think the standard is 78 decibels. So they're similar to an automobile, and there has been actually quite a bit of work done in recent years where they're actually working to quiet the drivetrain systems as well, which put off some noise. I think probably what she might be referring to would be people who have modified their snowmobiles to make them louder. It's something that probably should be pointed out. There has been a law change this year where the Warden Service can now write a ticket for a modified exhaust just based on the fact that it has been changed from the original equipment. So please, folks, keep your snowmobiles quiet and original. The landowners that we are very thankful that they let us use their lands don't like loud exhausts, so let's keep them quiet so we can stay in their good graces.
All right.
Yeah, we pushed that law change this past year because it was turning into an issue, particularly people riding into towns to access services. And, you know, you're sitting there in your living room and someone goes by and you just, you know, the china's rattling in the hutch, and it's totally unnecessary, and you have to make it happen these days. It's not a matter of the machines anymore.
Yeah, just a matter of being considerate.
Correct.
Yeah. We'll go to Florence, who's calling from the Maine Veterans Home in Caribou. Hi, Florence.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I always enjoy your program when I remember to tune it in. As you said, I do live at the Veterans Home now, and I'm only 89 years old, but that's beside the point, and blind. But my husband and I were snowmobilers so many years ago, and he and a friend actually used to groom the feeder trails with a bed spring towed behind the machine, and it did a remarkable job.
That's a great story.
It certainly did. They used to, they drag them behind their snowmobiles to smooth the trail. And of course, now we have, in most cases, hydraulic drags, and everything's controlled and everything. But yeah, the old bed spring trick, well, it still works, actually.
Florence, thanks for that tip. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was just going to say, some of the smaller clubs in the rural areas, they're not bed springs, so to speak, but they're homemade pipe drags that are really quite similar to what those would do, and they work well.
Well, Florence, have a great weekend. We're going to move on to Ocean Park and Shelby. Hi, Shelby. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a young person who's really interested in getting into snowmobiling. I actually just moved here from Texas, where I've been dirt biking year-round since I was 8 years old. We used to go out and groom the trails all the time, and it's actually a lot of fun to go out there and, you know, cut branches and trim the trails and everything. I was wondering if these trails, if they allow dirt bikers during the summer, and if that's a good way to get involved year-round.
Well, our clubs typically obtain permission for snowmobile use only from the landowners, and so you definitely want to talk to the landowners. The state does have a growing ATV trail system, which is about half the size of the snowmobile system. And depending on which trail it is, you can ride dirt bikes on them. So our advice would probably be to check with ATV Maine, which is a sister organization, and see if there's a local club in that area.
Shelby, thanks for your call, and welcome to Maine. We have an email from Thomas. We require automobiles and motorcycles to have liability insurance. Isn't it about time we have that requirement for ORVs? I'm a snowmobile and ATV rider who has done this, and it isn't that expensive.
That's true, and we certainly encourage everybody to carry liability insurance in case there's an issue. It's been brought up several times in the legislature. Generally, it's opposed by the insurance industry. Because it's a lot less flexible or a lot less stringent than it is for automobiles. And what they were finding is people would go and they would buy the insurance and make the first payment. They'd have their little card if they needed to show it, and then they would just cancel the insurance. Accidents happen. The important thing to remember is under the state liability laws, the landowners are always protected from liability, whether or not they give permission to use their properties. And that's really kind of the foundation of all outdoor recreation on private land in Maine.
We'll go to Elise, who's calling from Liberty. Hi, Elise. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the show. My son, who's 13, is newly into snowmobiling and really enjoying the sport. We got a used mid-90s Arctic Cat, 340,
perfect.
I think, horsepower, perfect size to start on. But it belches smoke like you wouldn't believe. And I'm just wondering, what kind of sled might we look for going forward that's a little friendlier to the environment? Because I'm not too happy to be polluting like that.
He must
that.
Smell like a gas can when he comes home.
Yeah, which is another problem.
The standard is the magic year was 2006 when the manufacturers entered into an agreement with the federal EPA over emission standards and sound and things like that. And, you know, the sleds had been slowly improving up until that time. And now it's really as different as night and day. But, yeah, a mid-90s vintage machine, yeah, you can probably hear him a mile away, and you can smell him coming pretty close when he's getting to home.
Chris, anything to add?
Yeah, certainly. Anything fuel injected in the newer models is going to tend to run cleaner. But certainly something that you could do with an older sled is make sure you're running a high quality, they'll call it smokeless oil. Product that comes to mind would be like a Maxima brand Tundra or any of the manufacturer's branded oils. But they tend to, they have less soot and ash and smoke. So it's even though it's using the same amount of oil, it's going to tend to make it cleaner and less smoke. So that will help a little.
Elise, good question. Thanks for asking. And we do have to take another break. But before we do so, we want to say something about Monday's program. We're going to have two state legislative leaders join us for an update on what's happening in Augusta during this legislative session. So if you have comments or questions, go ahead and email them or post them ahead of time. You can send them to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine Energy Audit and Insulation Rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
A newspaper turns a mirror on a city and examines the reality of racism. What it finds is hard to hear.
The net worth of white families in this area is $247,000 and change, and the net worth of African-American families was $8. And that economic disparity becomes the driver of so many things.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, Racism in Boston, Image, Reality, Causes and Solutions.
Next is coming up in about 20 minutes at 2 o'clock after Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Catching up with the winter bird count in some unlikely places.
On a normal day, no birder would ever come to like this parking lot because it's literally just a parking lot. But there's some species that like trash, basically, and so you have to go where there's trash.
Citizen scientists ready to do whatever it takes. I'm Steve Kerwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Join us for Living on Earth Sunday morning at 7 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're learning all about snowmobiling in Maine. Joining me today, Chris Ring of Automatic Distributors and Bob Myers, who is with the Maine Snowmobile Association. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Randall on Facebook posted, I joined a snowmobile club before I had a snowmobile because I enjoyed the trails for cross-country skiing. Ski right and join a club.
Good advice.
And we have
and thank you.
Yeah, and then we have an email from Bill. What are the rules for sharing the trails with cross-country skiers, all-terrain vehicles, and hikers? Are there guidelines?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the clubs obtain permission to be snowmobile trails. Some are multi-use trails. The state owns some former rail beds that are used ATVs in the summertime, snowmobiles, skiers in the winter, bicycles in the summertime. The key, once again, is communications and letting everybody know and, you know, just keep your wits about you when you're out there and keep your eyes open because...
Yeah, if you don't know if there's a snowmobiling club in your area, would you find it on your website,
You can
Bob?
Find it on our website or contact us. Our website is mesnow.com. We do have a list of all 289 clubs, and we can certainly put you in touch with the right people.
And probably a quick search on a search engine, too. Type in your town, snowmobile club, and
it will come right up.
Okay, we're going to go to David, who's calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I actually live down the street from you, so this is kind of amusing. I maintain ski trails on some land that belongs to the town, and it's very painful to spend 3 hours grooming and then have snowmobiles come through and completely destroy the trail. It is a mixed-use area. They're legally allowed to be there, but is there some way to encourage better behavior? I'm also worried because people are walking dogs. There are little kids tobogganing and flying saucering, and some people on snowmobiles come through very fast, jumping off of different parts of the terrain.
Sure, it's a good question, David. I'm sure it's an issue, especially in the more populated areas of Maine, where open space is so precious. Everybody wants to, you know, have a piece of the same property.
It's basic courtesy, and I know we used to have a snowmobile club in Cape Elizabeth. I know there's no official snowmobile trails there anymore. You know, that really sounds like an issue. You'd want to talk to the local game warden and maybe have them come out and go for a little ride. And you could probably pinpoint the days when you're having the most problems. And they do a terrific job, get out there, and they start off by educating people. And if the education doesn't work, well, then there's other remedies. But that really sounds like a situation that, you know, you could get your arms around it, David, and I'm sure the warden service would be happy to help out.
All right, David, good luck to you. And go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to mention, and I don't know the specific area that you're speaking of, but I do know some areas, they'll have cross-country trails and snowmobile trails, and they'll even crisscross in the same area, but they will be distinct. I don't know if that's something that you could do, but I know cross-country skiers tend to like, you know, a flat groomed, and sometimes they put the grooves right in the grooming area. So maybe there's a way that you could separate, you know, have one cross-country ski trail and then the other trail for the other users.
Right. Even just in Millinocket, where there's, you know, it's a huge snowmobiling area, but the Northern Timber Cruisers Club up there, they maintain a separate 100 miles of cross-country ski trails.
And you know, good for all of us if both become more popular. So figuring
out
a way
to
both
be
outside.
Outdoors.
That's
that
right.
Is correct.
All right. Thanks,
can't
David.
Can't hibernate all winter.
Well, you can.
Well, you can.
With a good book and Netflix. But thanks, David. An email from Travis. How much has the popularity of snowmobiling declined in the last few decades? Has climate change affected the numbers? So have you seen a difference in some of the trails in parts of the state?
Not really. Back in the early part of the 2000s, we had a couple of years where snowmobile registrations went over 100,000 a year. When 2008 came in the recession, the bottom kind of dropped out for a little bit. But last year, we had 85,000 sleds registered, which is really good. Several other states in the Northeast, like New Hampshire and Vermont, have seen declines, but it seems to be very popular in Maine. We keep an eye on climate change, but what we really pay attention to is weather patterns. And the past number of years, we're in a pattern. Storms come in. We get the cold from Canada, and we get the storms in from the Atlantic Ocean. And Maine is really blessed by its geography.
All right. A question from Jim on Twitter. Why has snowmobiling become so expensive with the cost of snowmobiles and equipment, and how can you do it on a budget? Chris, we talked a little bit about this earlier, but maybe a little more in depth of, you know, thinking about a budget snowmobiling.
Sure. There are some low-cost options out there. Well, certainly, I mean, you could start with a used machine, you know, and find them relatively expensive, inexpensively. But if you compare back in the late 60s and the early 70s, what the cost of a top-of-the-line snowmobile was versus what they are in today's dollar, they're only slightly more expensive today. But what's important to keep in mind is you compare what you're getting for a machine these days versus back then. They're much more complex. They ride better. They're more capable. They're more efficient. I mean, they're magnificent pieces of equipment these days.
All right.
But I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that there are some inexpensive four-stroke machines that get 20 and 30 miles to the gallon. So even though they seem relatively expensive to purchase, the cost of ownership is way down. So being able to enjoy the sport really isn't that much more expensive than it's ever been.
All right.
And if you're concerned that you're not going to use it a lot, you can go to the rental option, and there's plenty of places to rent a machine for the day. And that way you can still get out a few times a year and not have to break the bank.
Bob, I want to talk a little bit about safety. You know, all the years I was a daily news reporter, there'd be these horrible stories about snowmobiling accidents, often involving drinking and often involving speeding. What are Maine's laws?
Maine's laws, very strict laws on OUI, and that was an issue about 15 years ago, and they've passed some legislation and really got their arms around it. It's very stringent. You can go to jail for snowmobiling OUI. We support zero tolerance while you're on the trails. The standard for OUI is the same as it is for an automobile, 0.08. Save that for the end of the day when you're sitting around and telling all the ridiculous stories about what you did all day. And just stay sober out there on the trails. The big one we see these days, speed is always an issue. People got to slow down, take it easy. But really important these days is staying on the right-hand side of the trail. And once again, it's tied into the speed. Maine doesn't have a speed limit. They have what they call a reasonable and prudent speed is the standard. And if you come screaming around a corner half sideways with a big rooster tail coming out behind your sled, you're going too fast and you're out of control. And that's how people get hurt.
All right. We'll go to Chris calling from Fayette. Hey, Chris, go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to give a word of kudos to the snowmobile clubs. I'm from Central Maine and represent a pretty large group of mountain bikers and fat bikers now, and we've reached out to about 10 of the local snowmobile clubs and support them with a $50 membership annually, just to contribute to the upkeep and maintenance of the sleds and or of the trails. And the response we've had almost across the board has been one of welcome and open arms. So I just wanted to say thank you. As a former snowmobiler who used to ride, I used to ride 300-400 miles a weekend. Don't ride anymore, but I'm on a fat bike quite a bit, and it's just great to have the trails. And so I just wanted to say a public thank you from the mountain bike and the fat bike community.
Well, thank you for supporting the clubs. They need all the help they can get, and they're a true community service.
Okay. Chris, thanks for your call. And Chris in Bangor, I want to ask both you and Bob one last question before we go, which is give us a tip. What would be a terrific place to go out snowmobiling this weekend or sometime this season that maybe you think people don't know how wonderful it is?
Well, this weekend, I would suggest going to check out the Snowdio over in Rangeley. The trail system over there is in tip-top shape, and, that's just going to be a great time. But on another note, it would be the abandoned locomotives up in the Allegash. That's an area that just you can Google that and find directions to it, but it's just an amazing trip, and it's very difficult to get to in the summer months, so... It's a great place to check out.
All right. What about you, Bob? And you can give us more than one.
Well,
I know you don't want to pick your babies.
I love every place in Maine. I really like riding around Moosehead Lake, particularly the northern end of the lake, which is absolutely beautiful by Kineo. And one of my favorite things, I've got a couple of buddies up in Madawaska, and there is nothing better than getting up on a Sunday morning when the trails were groomed the night before and going and riding from Madawaska to Fort Kent, and you stop at Frenchville and have lunch or breakfast at Rosette's restaurant, and it's just doesn't get any better.
Okay, and what do you order at Rosette's restaurant?
Oh, poutine.
Okay, on that note, we're going to say thank you to both of our guests, Bob Myers, whose voice you just heard, Executive Director of the Maine Snowmobile Association, and Chris Ring is Business Development Manager at Automatic Distributors, who is a supplier of snowmobile parts, gear, and accessories. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. We had additional help from Rich Tozier. Owen Manahan answered the calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our archives at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast tonight at 7. Rebroadcast. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Monday on the program, as we mentioned, the latest from the state legislature. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.